Welcome to this week's edition of the Third Opinion Podcast. This is a special edition of Third Opinion. The show in its entirety is a discussion of the attack on Israel and the ongoing warfare there. You'll want to listen to every second. Don't forget to subscribe to Third Opinion wherever you get your podcasts. Here's this week's special edition of Third Opinion.
Whenever you are listening to this, this is the Third Opinion, Two Jews, Three Opinions. I'm Mike Thiessen.
Maureen Jaffe.
And this is a special report today. We are going to focus almost the entire show on the attack on Israel. And I want to say right at the top that I am, and I know Maureen is, opposed to war. And that's part of the tenet of WMNF, to be striving for peace all the time. I was a protester of the Vietnam War. I thought our foray into Iraq and Afghanistan was ill-timed. But let me say this to all the people who are listening, who are criticizing Israel. I want you to imagine that you were president of the United States and Mexico started launching rockets into Houston and Dallas. What would you do? If you say you would have done nothing and not retaliated, you would have been impeached and convicted before you could even turn your head around. That's exactly what has happened. Israel, and I will say to this because we're going to be criticized by some of the people who listen to this show, Israel was attacked. Israel was attacked by Hamas. So please, put your criticism away. It really torques me off because I've received some emails and letters saying that we are going to take this show and defend Israel. Damn right we are going to defend Israel. That's right. They were attacked. And I think that's really important for us to get off on the table right away. Israel was not the aggressor. It was Hamas who thought that they will have a political advantage because Abbas stopped the elections, and they saw a political advantage to try to show the Palestinian people that they are out there for them, and then recklessly attacked Israel.
Exactly. And you know, Mike, I think the other reason why it's important, why I think it's relevant to the values of WMNF, is because we are going to report today on truth. There are so many false narratives from not just mainstream media like Washington Post, CNN, Fox News, New York Times, you know, BBC, Associated Press, et cetera, false narratives being put out there. But there are willfully gross negligent or intentionally hate-filled lies being spread on social media by major influencers like actors like Mark Ruffalo, or like singers like Dua Lipa, or other actresses and people out there.
Trevor Howard, who has a huge following.
Right, claiming ethnic cleansing by Israel, and this is apartheid by Israel, and end the occupation, and not just that, but also by members of Congress. So, you know, I think today's show, Mike and I want to set the record straight. We want to get facts to you, actual facts of what's happening, and clear the air on these issues, on things you're not going to hear on mainstream media. Because personally for me, as a Jew and as an American citizen, as someone who loves Israel as well, it is so upsetting to sit here and just you feel like you don't have a voice in the world. We don't have a voice on social media. Israel's not just under a ground assault. And when Mike talks about the rockets, we're talking over 2,500 very serious, sophisticated rockets being launched into bedroom communities, into main population centers in Israel since last Monday. 2,500 rockets. In some instances, the Hamas is launching over 170 rockets in a single minute into bedroom communities in Ashkelon, Ashdod, Tel Aviv, Haifa, and Jerusalem's being attacked, Be'er Sheva is being attacked. So people understand that the matter, this lack of moral clarity here, and Israel trying to protect her people who have been living in bomb shelters. And yeah, most of these communities, actually, a lot of the homes have bomb shelters today. Like these little safe rooms they have to go into. Children have been sleeping in safe rooms. People have been dying. And these bombs that Hamas are releasing are purposely intended to create as many mass casualties as possible. Where in Israel's response, Israel is trying to be very strategic and save civilian lives, to respond to these rockets that are coming into their community. So we really, we're anti-war, but we also feel like the lies that are out there in this false narrative in the media and in social media today, all it does is stoke more hatred against Jews, the Jewish world, and Israel. And as we will see, there is more and more anti-Semitism now around this. Jewish synagogues are being attacked. More Jews are going to be attacked. All it does is stoke this absolute hate of Jews. And it's very alarming to us as we continue to see this rise of anti-Semitism in this country. And so we want to be responsive. We want to be responsible. And we want to provide some facts. So as you mentioned, Mike, yeah, look, you know, there are riots. So the Temple Mount, the most holy site in all of Judaism, also is the home to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And so on Friday night last week, a week and 3 days ago, there are between 70,000 to 90,000 Palestinians and Israeli Arabs. They're praying, but not just praying, rioting. Riot broke out because you had hatred, violent rhetoric being released by Mahmoud Abbas, by Abu Mazen, the head of the Palestinian Authority, and then Hamas. And so they're both vying against each other because Abbas canceled the Palestinian elections, the first one in 16 years, because he knew he was going to lose to Hamas in the West Bank. And so Hamas is now trying to like flex their muscles and demonstrate to the Palestinian people, like, we are the ones who represent you. So they start this false narrative of ethnic cleansing in Sheikh Jarrah, which is a neighborhood you might have heard about. We're going to have some of our interviewees are going to talk about that today. It is a private land dispute. There's no question that this Jewish family owns the land and the homes. It's a private land dispute that's been in the courts for years because the Palestinian families that were living there had stopped paying rent years ago. And so there's this dispute, like, if you're not going to pay rent, I'm trying to evict you. It has nothing to do with ethnic cleansing. It is literally a private dispute between the owners and the renters. That's all. And so you have these violent riots break out. And then Monday, Hamas says, I'm going to up you, Abbas, in the West Bank, and literally starts barrages of significant rocket attacks. And these are rockets using Iranian technology and Iranian funds.
It is so bad. I tried to do an interview yesterday with a woman's sister who lives in Tampa, told me about her sister's harrowing experiences. And I could not talk to her because she spent the whole day going in and out of the bomb shelters as air raid sirens were going off the entire time. We really want you to understand that despite the dome, the Iron Dome that protects against some of the rockets, some are getting through and killing Israelis. And also we have to say, listen, the Palestinian citizens that are killed, and there are some, because Gaza is so tightly compact. It's more compact than New York City. And unfortunately, when you have means of war, civilians become casualties in something like this. But the blame, again, goes to Hamas, not to Israel. I go back to the analogy. Mexico dropping rockets in Dallas and Houston, what would you do? Listen, Mark Regev is the, go ahead.
Just quickly, just that one point, because I think it's also important. The other thing that people need to understand is Hamas is purposely, just like they did in 2014, they purposely placed their rocket launchers in civilian populations, in neighborhoods, in schools, in hospitals. They are purposely doing it in civilian populations. And what you also need to know is at least 10%, it said between 10 and 15% of all the rockets they've launched have actually gone errant and landed in the Gaza Strip. And there are reports from Palestinian journalists that Hamas themselves have killed, you know, potentially up to 20 of their own citizens. I think the report is even more. I think there was even more that's been since that last report, as well as, you know, many children. So when mainstream media is talking about, oh, this many numbers of Palestinians have died and this many number of Israelis have died, when they give you that number, they don't tell you, FYI, many of these Palestinians who have died at the hands of Hamas's own rockets, including children. This is a very important fact that mainstream media is not talking about.
Okay, let's get to Mark Regev, who is the senior advisor to Bibi Netanyahu, who sort of puts a perspective on what Israel is doing and why they have responded to these attacks. Here's Mark Regev.
So it's true, Hamas is a problem. And unfortunately, they're a problem that's not going to go away. And we want Hamas to understand that their missile attacks on Israel are unacceptable and that they will think twice and three times before ever doing it again. And that's why we're hitting back hard. As you know, we've been targeting their infrastructure, their armories, their munitions, their command and control, their communications. We are hitting Hamas hard. And the idea is for them to understand that it is not in their interest to provoke Israel to be shooting at our civilian population the way they have been.
So when, how long will this operation continue for? What is the sort of end game that's been set for this particular operation?
As long as it takes. To those around the planet who are calling for an immediate ceasefire, we say that solves nothing. It solves nothing whatsoever. And that would be a Band-Aid, a quick fix, and we'd only be back to square one in a week from now when Hamas would shoot rockets again. That's not our goal. We don't want a quick fix. We want to come out of this in a situation where we've got a long period, a sustained period of peace and quiet for Israel, that Israeli citizens don't have to live in fear of an incoming rocket. We believe that's possible. The IDF, as I said before, is hitting Hamas hard. We want them to understand that it is simply unacceptable for them to shoot rockets into Israel and for them to understand that it's not in their interest for them to shoot rockets into Israel.
Well, you mentioned the international reaction. Prime Minister Netanyahu did speak with President Biden yesterday. Give us a sense of how the prime minister feels that call went.
Well, he thanked the president for the American support for our right to defend ourselves, which is very important. And we appreciate that message from the president. And we also made clear that we have to now make sure that Hamas understands that there is no quick fix for them, that Hamas can't cry wolf and go to their friends at the United Nations and say, get this stopped now when Israel is hitting them back. I mean, that's the game Hamas wants to play. They want to barrage Israel with rockets and then get, I don't know, the rotating Arab League member at the United Nations Security Council to turn around and say, ceasefire. And they'll get some support for that at the United Nations. I'm glad to say that the United States has not allowed that to happen, and that we will finish this the way we want to finish it. In other words, we will get out of this crisis with a situation of sustained peace and quiet. The citizens of Israel will not and should not have to live in a situation where they have to be running to their bomb shelters because Hamas is firing rockets into our country.
Now, as I mentioned, Mark, the prime minister, the government is also dealing with a second but certainly related crisis, the unrest in Israeli Arab cities. What we've seen is, I think, unprecedented. And the prime minister is suggesting an unprecedented response, sending IDF troops, deploying them in domestic Israeli communities. Is that a correct response and answer to what we're seeing?
Yes, and I'll explain why. I was with the prime minister yesterday up north when he went to Akko, and we visited with the mayor, and we met with the senior commanders of the police, both nationally and in the north. And the prime minister's message was clear. This sort of violence is unacceptable. This sort of violence is intolerable, and that we have to fight against it. We have no tolerance whatsoever for this sort of violence, whether it's Arab on Jewish violence or Jewish on Arab violence. Unacceptable, won't be tolerated. And the prime minister said, if we need to beef up the police with the military, we'll do so. The law allows us to do that. And just as, let's say, the military were deployed in civilian areas during the coronavirus crisis to help deal with that, so the military can be involved in protecting the public. The law allows that, to augment and support the police in their important job of bringing peace, quiet, stability to the streets of Israel.
Mark, there are certainly immediate reasons why we're seeing this unprecedented outburst of violence, the situation in Jerusalem, the situation in Gaza. But clearly, there are some deeper social trends, political trends at work here in the Israeli Arab community. Isn't the government of Israel, the one that's been in office or the prime minister for 12 years, and we have to say before that, somehow failing to deal with these underlying causes, perhaps, of this unrest?
Can I say the following? We were actually hopeful that we were on a more optimistic trajectory here with Israel's Arabs. We were seeing, everyone was talking about the Israeli Arab community being more involved in Israel, wanting to become more Israeli, being part of Israeli democracy in a full way, even them voting for Zionist political parties. In other words, there was a good story to tell. And unfortunately, this current internal problem with Israeli Arabs and the fact that we've seen this violence is something that is very depressing and disappointing. it doesn't mean that we give up on our vision of integration and of seeing the Israeli Arab citizens as full citizens of this country contributing. We can't give up on that goal. But firstly, we have to reestablish law and order in Israeli cities. That's good for Israeli Jews. That's good for Israeli Arabs. We want to see law and order on our streets, nothing less.
You know, when he talked about not having a ceasefire right away, you get back to a square one. 2008, 2014, same problems. It is time to put an end to this.
Yeah, you know, and this is, you know, this is kind of Hamas's MO, right? Every time they do this, they sort of engage in this. We're gonna barrage Israel with rockets, and then we're gonna call for a ceasefire. And this is the thing, you know, we see. This week, Hamas's top leadership, you know, there's reports that they're in direct communication with the head of the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, you know, and it's almost like Iran's looking to see, okay, so how many rockets, like how more sophisticated have you gotten using our technology, using, you know, missile guided technology, like how much more sophisticated have you gotten over the years since 2014? You can, how many rockets can you launch in 5 minutes? Okay, so you can, you know, 100 plus rockets. Okay, so this is good. And they're looking at all of this and staging it. It's almost like they're staging it. And like, because Iran obviously swore to Israel's destruction. So you have to remember Hezbollah, which controls Lebanon, Hezbollah has embedded all throughout Lebanon and Lebanese cities, communities, residential areas, rocket launchers, rockets, missiles. It's estimated between 150,000 to 200,000, and that they have the ability to launch up to 2,000 rockets, precision guided missiles, in a single day into Israel. So you do that along with what, and that's on the northern border. You do that along with what Hamas is doing right now in Israel's southeast border. I mean, I don't care how many Iron Domes you have. There's no way you could protect your population. You can't protect your civil. Israel has no way of protecting it. It's almost like Iran's out there gauging it. So what you're hearing really from Israeli military intel is like, and what we've really seen from them, I mean, they're not attacking civilian populations in Gaza. They're going after strategic military, the Hamas, the terrorists, which is a terrorist organization. They are butcherers. They are murderers, not just of Israelis, but of their own people. They're going after Hamas's strategic infrastructure. You know, so and that and their headquarters and their operations and that's what you see Israel doing. And I think that's what he was talking about, Mark Regev. Sort of like, this is why we need to deal with this infrastructure that they've built up since 2014. So by the way, this is the money that Hamas is not spending on infrastructure for their own people, but for military ops. And I should also add, you know, Hamas has diverted gasoline and other things that was and fuel that was intended for their electric power plant and their sewage plants and their water plants this weekend in Gaza, has diverted that fuel to use for their rocket launchers and their military operations. So again, the Palestinian people in Gaza are again suffering because they have to worry about Hamas's rockets. They don't have electricity. They don't have clean water. Like, this is miserable.
It's not Israel's fault, as some people have said. Listen, I also want to mention, if you have a comment or question on this show, and this is a special report about the attack on Israel, you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. We'll try to get your comment or your question answered on the air, because this is an issue that is so important to every Jew in America and obviously in Israel. One thing I was pleased about today is the United States response earlier this week. And Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, who is Jewish, had this response about the support for Israel. Here he is, the Secretary of State.
Rocket attacks must cease. We've been very clear about Israel's right to defend itself. We're also engaging our regional partners with urgency to see to it that calm prevails. And our heartfelt condolences go out to the loved ones of those lost. We're also deeply concerned about the violence in the streets of Israel. As Muslims celebrate Eid and Jews prepare to mark Shavuot, Israelis and Palestinians deserve to take part in these celebrations without fear of violence. We believe that Israelis and Palestinians deserve equal measures of freedom, security, dignity, and prosperity. That recognition will continue to drive our approach.
You know, one of the things that I find really disturbing is that for the first time that I can recall on a widespread basis, there are fights going on in Israel between Arab Israelis and Jewish Israelis. I mean, it is just terrible.
Right. So just to go back really quickly to Blinken's statement, I just want to be really, people should know that obviously the extreme progressive left in Congress has attacked the administration. They have attacked President Biden for supporting what they call an apartheid occupier, for calling Israel occupationist and demanding, like Representative Ilhan Omar has demanded that Congress also supply Hamas with the Iron Dome. It's just complete lack of moral clarity, and it just this really hypocritical narrative, quite frankly, and not.
She and the squad basically have flipped the script to say that Israel is the aggressor here. And I remind you, and we've said this a lot, but we have to, that this started with Hamas firing rockets into Israel. Plain and simple.
Hundreds of them into bedroom communities starting on Monday. And I want to be really clear. And then also, you know, and the way they do it, they're very violent in their rhetoric and they're vicious. Like Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez attacked Andrew Yang, the Asian American running for mayor of New York, who had put out a statement in support of Israel. She just went on attack in social media. And this is the thing, like, it's like, oh my God, it's like, here she is attacking Asian American. And it's like, and it's vicious. And it's like, in essence, threatening to him. And I think, you know, you got to, like, it's like, I don't care about the facts, is what she's pretty much saying. If you don't support my people in my position, then I'm going to attack you. I don't want to hear the facts. I don't care about the facts. It's like this complete reversal and this flip of moral superiority and just like this lack of moral clarity by them. So very alarming. But going back to that question, I mean, I know President Rivlin put out a statement this week. So it started in this, which is really sad because a lot of people don't understand. Jews and Arabs live side by side peacefully in Israel pretty much all the time. Nobody ever hears about this. But in the midst of all these tensions, it occurred first at the beginning of the city of Lod. And the city of Lod, you know, Jews and Arabs live in the same apartment buildings. They've been living together for years. But this is also a city that is known for a lot of their Arab gangs. So a lot of times when the Arabs would go to vote, they were very angry with the joint list because the joint list wasn't focusing on police protection in their communities and different things. And so what we saw were these Arab gangs took to the streets and you know, what we saw were literally pogroms. There were about two nights of pogroms, hundreds of cars burned, businesses, synagogues burned, Molotov cocktails being thrown into people's homes. And then what happened, then it disintegrated. And then you had, you know, extreme Jews then taken to the street three nights later. And then you had these battles going on. Obviously, President Rivlin has had a very strong statement calling for peace. Benjamin Netanyahu said there was just no excuse for pogroms and no excuse for Jews reacting. Like there is absolutely no excuse and there'll be zero tolerance of putting extra police on the streets to stop it. And you know, and I think the sad thing about it is that if Hamas could rejoice in anything, they're probably laughing at that going, yay, we succeeded in causing this conflict where there's been peace and people living side by side for 70 years. And I think that's, you know, probably the saddest and most disappointing thing about this week is because even in past conflicts, this didn't happen. And it was like how Hamas was so successful in stoking this violence. I think I think that the Israelis I've talked to this week, they're so deeply saddened by it. They're like, this just isn't us. It doesn't represent, we've lived together. We're neighbors. Like, I don't understand what's happening right now. And I think people are truly saddened by this.
One of the things that happened yesterday was the bombing of the AP headquarters. Al Jazeera was in there as well. Now, personally, Laureen, we'll probably disagree. I thought the optics of that were really bad. There might have been Hamas intelligence working in the basement or something. And some people say that the media knew, but the optics create the impression that the news will not get out in Gaza because foreign press is barred from going into Gaza. And I thought that was a mistake. I truly.
I know. I mean, this is the deal. The AP and Al Jazeera knew. I mean, this isn't a secret. I mean, Hamas is right outside with rocket launchers and they knew. I mean, this is not a big secret. It's the same thing that happened in 2014. They're right there with Hamas and Israel is trying to target, but people also don't understand is that Al Jazeera Associated Press, everyone was given over 1 hour. Like, Israel is not—
Oh, they were given time to get out. Absolutely.
They had a whole hour. Israel warns. Like, there's no other military on the face of the earth that says, by the way, we're coming to take down that building because it is home to strategic operatives for Hamas. So you have 1 hour to evacuate that building. So please—
I'm just talking about the public relations— the public relations battle. I thought it was bad optics. There are so many other targets.
It's bad optics, but this is what Hamas does. This is why they go and they set up in residential communities and homes and apartment buildings and hospitals. But, you know, this is also the same AP newswire. So when AP was critical about it, saying, oh, we were surprised, I'm just going to call baloney on that because they knew. And this is also the same bureau that, as you and I talked about last year, there's a 30-year Palestinian veteran who worked for that bureau who was terminated last year by the AP because he put out a news story that was critical of Hamas's governance. And, you know, I put that out there, like, you know, and there's a lot of questions. There were statements back in 2014 that the AP was literally threatened by Hamas and was forced to put out statements like this where they were critical, you know. So I don't really know, but I'm not buying the story they didn't know. I mean,
OK, we've got a report from the BBC about that. Let's take a listen to this report about the incident yesterday with the destruction of the AP building.
I don't want to call it the AP building.
This is the moment an Israeli missile strike destroyed a high-rise building housing the Associated Press, Al Jazeera, and other office spaces and homes in Gaza on Saturday. The owner of the building and journalists here are pleading on the phone with an Israeli intelligence officer who warned them the attack was coming and to evacuate. Al Jazeera's correspondent Wael Al-Dadu reporting that they didn't have time to grab their equipment. Israel says the building housed assets belonging to Hamas's military intelligence, the latest of many such attacks that Israeli forces say are response to the thousands of Hamas rockets fired toward Israel in the last few days. Meanwhile, the civilian toll of the conflict and civil unrest across Israel and the Palestinian territories is mounting. There are fears that Gaza's only power station may run out of fuel within days, and foreign aid is starting to trickle in. Morocco is sending 40 tons of medical supplies, food, and blankets to the West Bank and Gaza. Egypt is also sending ambulances into Gaza to try and bring Palestinians back to Egyptian hospitals. Palestinian medics say over 100 people have been killed in Gaza, including dozens of children. This man, a Gaza resident named Ahmad Yacoubi, says planes hit his neighbor's building, which housed a family of 10. Mark Reedman lives across the border in the town of Ashdod, Israel. At least 9 people have died in Israel, also including children.
There was explosion, a hard one. We had a rocket hitting our building. We live over here. I heard the sound of window splashing, you know, windows falling off the building. A lot of, you know, people screaming. Right? I have 3 kids, small ones, and I need to handle, you know, the explaining them what happened here and why this is happening. So it's not a trivial situation.
Diplomatic efforts to stop the crisis have shown no sign of progress.
It's terrible. I mean, it is just terrible. But again, let me get back to the optics. Bob Menendez, senator from New Jersey, who is a big supporter of Israel, criticized Israel for destroying the building. I just, again, the optics were not good to do that, in my estimation.
I get it. And this is why Hamas chooses those types of buildings to have a strategic headquarters, right? So let me just go back to 3 things. I think that one video clip from BBC, again, makes our point. Number one, that report by that BBC reporter, no word in there about the fact that Israel provided a 1 hour warning. Let everyone know in that building in the surrounding neighborhood, listen, we're gonna strike this building in 1 hour. Please, for your safety, please remove yourself. Please evacuate. Not a single word in that report, number one. Number two, when they talked about the death toll, they didn't talk about the fact that children and people in Gaza have been killed by Hamas's own rockets. They're not talking about that. They let this assumption, like this false narrative, like, oh, we're not gonna say it, so people are gonna assume they're killed by Israelis. Very, very, very irresponsible by the media. And then the other thing that he mentioned, the power station. Oh, they're going to run out of fuel for the power station. Well, did you want to talk about the fact that the reason why is because Hamas has been diverting the fuel from the power station to use for its rocket launchers and to fuel its military operation right now against Israel? No, of course you don't want to say that. So there are all these, what I call, are willful omissions that create this false narrative. And by not saying it, these willful omissions, just like in the world of law, and these willful omissions make you believe something else. And it creates this false narrative that's very ugly on Israel. So,
and I
makes my point.
I know, I understand that, Laureen, but there's no doubt that because that building was destroyed, less news will be covered in, and you've got to cover the good and the bad, and without allowing foreign journalists in, we're not getting a complete picture, and we need that complete picture, I think.
Exactly. I mean, that's my point. It's just so frustrating. We're not getting this complete picture. Nobody in mainstream media wants to talk about this. So.
Well, we're going to talk about the false news that is coming out of the media coming up in just a bit. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll focus on this special edition of The Third Opinion.
Our special report on the attack on Israel will continue in just a moment. If you have a comment about Third Opinion or want to make a suggestion for a future podcast, you can do that at our website, thirdopinionpodcast.com. That's thirdopinionpodcast.com. Now, back to this special edition of Third Opinion.
Welcome back to The Third Opinion, Two Jews, Three Opinions. I'm Mike Thiessen.
Laureen Jaffe.
I thought you left me, Laureen. We have a special edition today as we're talking about the attack on Israel, which is dominating the news in the United States and obviously on our show. One of the people that we had an opportunity to talk to this week, Laureen did, is a man by the name of Adam Levesque with Camel. With what?
Camera.
I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. She was my camera. Which with Camel. Hello, Mike. Takes what is put in the media and analyzes the falsehoods.
Right. So CAMRA, it's an acronym for Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting and Analysis. And I'd actually encourage you all to go to their website where you can get truth. I mean, they're not, it's what they do is they're just reporting facts. Like, here's what the BBC said, here's what actually happened on the ground. And that's their job. They've been doing this for years. And so, you know, when I talked with Adam Levick this week, he lives in Moadin, which is in central Israel. So he hasn't been in Tel Aviv or Ashdod, Ashkelon, even Jerusalem, some of the main targets of these rockets. They have had rockets in Moadin. You know, obviously he was telling me personally about the trauma, you know, the concern for the trauma and that post-traumatic stress that can occur in the children. He has young children and trying to explain to the children, you know, why we have to go into a bomb shelter, you know, that there's all these things. So obviously, you know, kind of like Mike's friend, you know, just fortunately I was able to talk with him, but these are the situations on the ground they're dealing with. And I think he does a really good job addressing point by point a lot of the issues that are sort of part of this false narrative out there right now in the media.
Here's Adam Levick.
Well, look, I think there's widespread support for the operation. I don't think any country in the world would allow their populations to be bombed by a, you know, internationally prescribed terror group and not support a defense of the country. These rockets are very often dismissed as useless fireworks, and that's the opposite of the truth. In fact, these rockets are created in Gaza for the most part, but they're made per Iranian designs, that is Iranian technology. Hamas accesses the information from the Iranian government to make the bombs more lethal, more accurate, and with greater explosive powers. So that, you know, if you were to see some of these explosions caught on video, some of these rockets exploding on Israeli civilian communities, you would be able to dismiss straight away the dismissal of them as useless fireworks. I mean, the explosive power and the sound of the explosion is horrifying. It's truly horrifying. And in fact, very often you'll see in the Israeli media when they report on Hamas rockets or Islamic Jihad rockets falling on Israeli communities, they might mention injuries. Amongst those injuries are people treated for shock. Shock because the sound, the explosion, is just horrifying. And when it you know, when it actually unloads, it's just in of itself, that's horrifying. You alone, the shrapnel and the other parts of the bomb that, you know, can cripple, injure, and kill people. So it's no joke. They're deliberately sent to fire at Israeli civilian communities with the intention of killing as many Israeli citizens as possible. And if you were on the receiving end, no one on the receiving end of these rockets would dismiss them. All it would take is one rocket land somewhere close to someone, or just to hear the Teva Adom red alert sirens go off. There's nothing funny or silly or underwhelming about it. It's a very, very serious and dangerous activity.
Because these missiles, in essence, are indiscriminately killing people. They don't care if they're killing Palestinians. They don't care if they're killing Israeli Arabs. They don't care if they're killing Israeli Jews. They don't care who they're injuring. And quite frankly, one of these could, in fact, even land on the Temple Mount and destroy the Alaska Mosque. So this concept of, oh, we're trying to defend Alaska, I mean, actually, you could destroy Alaska.
No, you make an excellent point, and a point that, as relatively intuitive as it is, rarely gets published, or rarely is vocalized. The idea that they're defending Al-Quds, that they're defending Jerusalem, while simultaneously firing rockets at that holy city, rockets that could just as easily, as you said, explode on Al-Aqsa Mosque and destroy Al-Aqsa Mosque and or kill Palestinians who are worshiping there is just absurd. And the fact that that even needs to be pointed out is remarkable. And look, you know, this is more about Hamas competing with Fatah for control of Palestinian support. You know, they want to be seen as the defenders of the faith, the defenders of Al-Aqsa, the defenders of Jerusalem. And they probably, sadly, are probably, probably successful in that. Their decision on Monday to start bombing Israeli cities was an attempt to take control and show the Arab street, the Palestinian street, that they're the only, true resistance, quote unquote. And you can't understand the current conflict without understanding that there was Palestinian election that was canceled by the Palestinian Authority. That was, because Fatah was looking like they were going to lose to Hamas. This is all about competing for the hearts and minds of Palestinian residents. The problem with most of the media coverage of the series of events that happened over the weekend and on Monday is that, it's always framed in terms of what Israel has done to provoke the situations. Never, ever, rarely do media outlets, do journalists covering the region say, what has Palestinian leadership done to bring on this crisis? What has Palestinian rioters done to bring on this crisis? What has, Hamas and Fatah done to incite violence, to incite hatred? The questions are never asked because Palestinians are never treated as moral agents. They're never assigned agency. They're always treated as children, really, who have no power to influence their fate. And instead, Israel is always the one which is assigned blame. And I think there is a liberal racism at play in most of the media coverage, whereby they just refuse to take Palestinians seriously the way that they would take any other group of adults seriously. And I think that's more than almost any other dynamic is what influences biased coverage of Israel in general and of the recent violence in Jerusalem and from Gaza more recently.
The media is sort of focusing on this Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood question and sort of talking about it in the terms of it being ethnic cleansing by Israel and how Israel is literally pulling these Palestinians, these Arabs out of their homes, and it's ethnic cleansing. This is sort of what we've heard in the media, this false narrative of really what's A, happening as far as that neighborhood is concerned, and B, the cause of sort of where we are today. Can you talk a little bit about, I think people need to understand, the court system, what's happening there, and really the truth around this neighborhood and that discussion. Can you sort of respond and provide some clarity based upon, the mistruths that are out there?
Yeah, I mean, there's several points. First of all, just to briefly address the ethnic cleansing charge, which is just absurd, and in fact, it's the opposite of the truth. Population years from the Israeli official statistics show that their percentage of Palestinians in East Jerusalem has increased relative to its Jewish citizens in the past two decades. It was like 39, Palestinians represented some 39% of East Jerusalem. Now they're like 43%. So, you know, to describe what's happening as ethnic cleansing is the opposite of the truth, or maybe it is that Israel is the worst ethnic cleansers in the history of mankind. I mean, I joke, but it just there's simply you know no way to dissect that without understanding that the opposite is happening, that Palestinians are increasing their presence in East Jerusalem. So that's, I want to just throw that in there, because the word ethnic cleansing is thrown around so nonchalantly and so unseriously by a lot of people. As far as the specific cases, we're talking about a few families, a few dozen Palestinians, and it's a private legal case that goes back decades, in which no one really, the courts haven't disputed that the property was owned by Jews. And there was an agreement decades ago whereby the Palestinian tenants would be able to continue to rent from this Jewish property as long as they continued to pay rent and as long as they continued to abide by all the other, you know, lease requirements that anyone who's ever rented an apartment knows they have to do. The reason why the owners, the Jewish owners, decided to file for eviction was because for ideological reasons, the tenants decided or were counseled not to pay rent, because they thought that would be legitimizing Israeli control over the quote-unquote east section of the city. So what we have here is not an Israeli government attempt to kick anybody out of their home, but a private property owner who has been in court over the past decades, with tenants that have stopped paying rent and in some cases have brought in other friends or neighbors to live there that aren't even on the lease. So it's a private property dispute. It has nothing to do with the Israeli government. There's no policy to drive out these or any other Palestinians. The way that it's been framed by the media, however, you would think that you know, the Israeli government decided one day that they were going to evict Palestinians from their home, and that's just not true. You know, all over the world, people are being evicted. Only in Israel is it an international story.
People were, you know, it was like they're stoking the, you had Abbas who was, you know, Abbas and Hamas both trying to demonstrate more violent rhetoric, like who could be more anti-Israel. Lots of violent rhetoric, trying to stoke people to violence. And the police were there to sort of bring calm. And because for people who've never been to Jerusalem and to the Old City at the Kotel, with the Jews gather and pray, it's sort of right below where the Temple Mount is, and they are easy targets and could be literally just slaughtered and killed by rioters that are above them. And so the police went up there to sort of quiet that the riots, and Sky News reporter sort of acted like, and I don't know why the police were there during this peaceful time of prayer.
People, if they want to read more about it, actually our blog, Camera UK, I actually posted about that very clip. It's funny that you mentioned that, by Mark Stone, the Sky News' Jerusalem or Middle East correspondent. It really came as a surprise because that particular journalist, based on my experience so far, has usually seems to try to do a good job. I don't know what he was seeing. I mean, literally what he said just defied the totality of the evidence from other media outlets and from eyewitnesses from the day of the riots. There was riots over the weekend, riots when he reported that, riots like the night he reported that, violent riots. And I don't know what, maybe during that one moment it was unclear to him why the police were moving in, but, you know, and since I wasn't able to figure out exactly what time that was, who knows? But, I mean, you know, maybe the police got intelligence that there was about to be rioting somewhere close by, or, you know, in the context of the fact that there was 48 hours of continuous rioting, it shouldn't have struck this journalist as odd that police were engaging in riot control methods. So that was particularly misleading, and, you know, I've seen a lot of misleading reports. That was just, you know, I'm still scratching my head figuring out what he was doing, what he was saying there. And in fact, you know, another example was that there was a fire, a tree was set on fire on the Temple Mount, and it was started by Palestinians who were rioting and who were throwing firecrackers towards Jews who were praying, who were down celebrating Yom Yerushalayim at the Kotel. You know, now fireworks, of course, is an explosive material. It could have caught fire at the hotel, and there could have been a fire. People could have been hurt. And the way that the media framed it in several media outlets, and we also posted about this, if you want to look at our site, that they framed it as they showed a photo that a video that made it seem as if the Jews down below, who again were celebrating Jerusalem Day and had Israeli flags and were singing songs, and it seemed as if the Jews were celebrating the Al-Aqsa Mosque being on fire. Now, two quick things. First of all, we spoke to eyewitnesses, and there was that song that was being sung. I forget the name of it, but the song that in Hebrew that praises God for helping defeat those who want to destroy us was being sung all throughout the day. So it didn't just simply rent. The song didn't ring out just when the fire started, number one. Number two, the idea that thousands of Jews celebrating Jerusalem Day at the Kotel would celebrate when there was a fire on the Temple Mount, which, of course, is the holiest site in Judaism, is absurd. Like, people don't realize when people say the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, they're also that's just another way of saying Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Whoever you talk to might describe it, use different language. But so the idea that Jews would celebrate a potential catastrophic fire on their religion's holiest site is ridiculous. Again, the media just, panned into one particular 3-second clip and made it seem as if Jews were relishing in the mosque being on fire based on no information, no credible sources, just based on a visual that fit their narrative. And, you see time and time again these stories that, some basic fact-checking could have disabused the journalists reporting that.
Just so aggravating. One of the other ones I want to talk about was there's this media coverage, Israel, the IAF struck a 14-story headquarters. It was a tower in Gaza where Hamas is operating out of. Now Israel, doing what Israel does, because they are held to a much higher moral ground, moral standard than any other military on the face of the earth, clearly much more so than Hamas or the Palestinian Authority, because Hamas and Iran can apparently get away with anything they want to. Israel is held to a much higher standard. And so Israel literally warns, gives a one-hour warning to those in the tower and to those in the surrounding neighborhood, saying, we are going to strike these headquarters in 1 hour. So please, for safety purposes, remove yourself from the area.
Yeah, well, I think you framed it pretty well. Hamas fires rockets indiscriminately, but towards civilian communities in an effort to kill as many Israeli civilians as possible. Whereas the IDF targets Hamas terrorists and does everything within its capability. Goes to greater length than probably any other Western army would go to in a similar situation to avoid civilian casualties and just target those particular terrorists. And sometimes, they give such a long amount of warning that they're even content with the terrorists escaping as long as they destroy the building where the terrorists are operating from. In fact, there's a pro-Palestinian NGO called DCI Palestine, which reports every attack, and they've been reporting that more like 9 children, maybe a total of 16 civilians total, including 9 children, have been killed by Hamas rockets or Islamic Jihad rockets that have fallen short. So if you see media outlets that show the Palestinian death toll, while every death is, of course, tragic when it comes to civilians, it's just important to dig deeper and realize that a lot of these now, like you said, a very relatively high percentage of rockets that is coming from Hamas are falling short, and quite a few of the civilian deaths are the fault of these Hamas rockets, not IDF attacks.
And let's say once again, war is terrible. We don't advocate that, but Israel is not to blame for this. Hamas is the one that sent the rockets to Israel, have killed their own people with rockets. That's really important to note that Israel is not the aggressor here. And we are not advocating for war, but I'll say, as I said at the beginning of the show, if you were president of the United States and Mexico launched rockets into Houston and Dallas, what would you do? And if you tell me you would do nothing,
then you would have been impeached as president before the day was ended and would have been convicted.
I mean, you would just be a liar. I mean, look, right now what Israel is trying to do, and again, it's kind of like Adam said, obviously I talked to Adam Friday morning, our time, it was Friday evening, his time, getting ready for Shabbat. And, you know, he had a very stressful week, obviously with his children hiding in safety bunkers and different things to protect them from the incoming missiles. But look, you know, at the end of the day, you have a responsibility to protect your land and your people. I mean, these are civilian populations that are being targeted, whereas Israel is trying to be very strategic and avoid civilian casualties, trying to strike Hamas, which is a globally recognized designated terrorist organization, strike their infrastructure, which we know Iran supports and Iran has been funding and building up, and trying to do it in a way, even with hour-long warnings, by the way, we're coming for you. Like Israel even said, like, we don't even care if we don't strike the terrorists, if we don't get out their leaders. Like, we're really just looking to dismantle their infrastructure so that we can set them back a couple of years, so we don't continue to find ourselves in these cycles with Hamas, where they all of a sudden just launch these massive attacks against our civilian population. So very real. So by the way, we have gotten some emails in, and Mike and I will comment on them shortly. I think a couple other things to take note. I mean, look, even the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, has pretty much told Hamas, you better stop these rocket attacks or we're gonna halt our commitment of financial investments into your infrastructure. And that's a big deal. I mean, this is huge coming from the Arab community saying, you know what, you better stop. Stop now or you're gonna suffer the consequences.
And the European Union was a supportive of Israel. The Israeli flag, what was flown in front of the Czech the Republic, flew the Israeli flag, and the Austria. Yeah. Let's get to the emails before we run out of time.
Just when you think about Austria, Mike, I mean, this is a country that was known for, you know, obviously for allowing the Nazis to come in and do what they want. But now you have Austria literally lifting up the Israeli flag on their parliamentary building, saying Israel is in solidarity with you. And I guess before we get to those emails, we should that one last comment about Naftali Bennett. Just going back to the elections, I know Mike and I talked a lot about the elections. Obviously, so Naftali Bennett, who has traditionally been in Netanyahu's government, who is the head of the Yamina party. It's a right party. It's more far right than actually Likud. And he was going to join with Yair Lapid on the left to join a unity government. And he said, look, I after all this week, I just feel like, you know, that the government that Yair is trying to create is not, you know, prepared to address these serious issues.
There will probably be a fifth election.
Yeah. So there
let's get past all this. All right. Let's get to the emails. Lorene, you wanted to talk about the one we got from Art.
Right. So here, let me pull up Art's email. So Art says, question, of course Israel has the right to exist and defend itself. So why are both denied to the Palestinians by Israel and to its mother, the United States? So I don't understand its mother, the United States, but first of all, the Palestinians do exist. Right now you have the Palestinian Authority, which engages in self-government and self-rule over the Palestinians in the West Bank, and Hamas, which engages in self-rule and government over the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And there are a multitude of Israeli Arabs who are very happy to be Israeli citizens. And as we said, are very prosperous in the land of Israel. So I don't think this is self-defense. I don't know what you think Hamas is self-defending against. So there were riots on the Temple Mount. So again, 70 to 90,000 Palestinian Israeli Arabs. So Palestinians, because Israel opens up Jerusalem, opens up the Temple Mount, our most holy site, to Palestinians to come in to worship for the month of Ramadan. So I don't think there's ethnic cleansing there, nor do I think that's occupation or apartheid. So they can come in from the West Bank to worship, as they did, as well as Israeli Arabs. They engaged in violent riots for 48 hours. And then, you know, Hamas trying to fight with Fatah for the heart of the Palestinian people makes up this whole live ethnic cleansing with Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, which you all know is a lie. And then they start launching rockets. So how is that Hamas self-defending? That's Hamas being Hamas, a terrorist organization trying to strike terror and fear into the hearts of people and trying to say, we are the bigger gun. We're better than Abbas and Fatah. Come with us. I mean, what is this about? This isn't about self-defense.
Well, I think that is so true. And That is part of the reason that we spent the whole hour today talking about this issue, Israel under attack. And let me say, we all pray for one thing, peace. We want this to end, but you can't just put a Band-Aid on this, because it will happen again and again and again. But our prayer as Shavuot starts tonight is to say, please let there be peace, and let's end this just tragedy.
Yeah, and to our Israeli friends who are literally living, as they go into this Shavuot holiday, living in bomb shelters.
We gotta run, Laureen. There's...
Ki malach alei hasavod, be strong and be strengthened.
Bye.
That's our podcast for this week. Remember to subscribe to Third Opinion wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, thanks for listening.